Hello, and welcome for the From Ground to Great show, a business, aviation, and personal growth podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Ruiz Jimenez, and today I am with John. John, how are you doing today?
Very good. Thanks for having me, Daniel.
Yeah. John, do you want to give a little bit about who you are, what you do, and why you like doing what you do?
Well, that's kind of a big question there, Daniel. But look, let's start at the beginning. Well, I tell you what, let's
get the mic just a little bit closer to you.
All right. Let's just frame this. 8 years ago, my wife and I started a business from nothing. And last year, our sales were $8.5 million. And this is a kind of a niche business in the packaging world, and it's these big totes that you see sometimes on the back of trucks. And these totes are used by, in particularly in bulk commodities, agriculture, that sort of thing. So we kind of figured out what the subject was about and turned it into a business, and, you know, we do pretty good at it, you know?
Yeah.
So, but along the way, we kind of learnt the sort of the rules of the road, as it were, with regards to business. And we didn't have any formal education in how to go about creating a business or anything. So what we created was some basic principles that we found very successful. And I think people might like to know what they are and could use them. They're very, very simple. In fact, I should probably end up writing a book or something about them.
Yeah, we were just talking about that. How do you start getting into writing a book? Yeah.
So, you know, but it's we started with nothing. It was I'll tell you the start of the story.
Yes, that would be great.
prior to the bag business, actually my very first business was when I was about 10 years old. And I grew up in a family of 10. I had 10 brothers and sisters, and you know, we weren't very well off, and in fact we were quite poor. You know, and my parents worked very hard trying to feed us 10 kids, and they're good parents, you know, they sort of made do with what they had and all that sort of stuff, but you know, they did what they had to do. And when I was 12, I remember my mother just sort of leaving the family, just sort of deserting the family, because she'd had too much. She couldn't handle, you know, us kids were just too much. And so it was my father, and I was the fifth one in the middle at that time. So we sort of had to fend for ourselves, right? So I had to take care of my other younger brothers and sisters. And I remember being invited to a birthday party with one of my school friends, and his father was the finance minister of the Labour Party, New Zealand Labour Party. I'm from New Zealand. New Zealand Labour Party. His name was Mr. Tizard. And my friend's name was Nigel Tizard. Anyway, it was his birthday, and it was the first birthday party I'd ever been invited to. And I was so excited. Oh, Nigel, I was just telling my sisters, and hey, Nigel invited me to a birthday party. You know, I've never been to one before. And I was like, you know, 10, 11. And she said, well, what are you gonna take him as a present, right? And I go, present? He said, yeah, you got to take a present. Everybody goes to a birthday party, you got to take a gift with you. You can't just show up there with nothing. And I go, oh, my God, a present. What do you think I should get him? He said, well, you know, get him a box of chocolates. You know, that's pretty sort of like kind of standard, you know, that's like something. So I said, well, how much is that? She said, I don't know, you're going to have to, you know. So it was a few bucks, right, a couple of bucks, $2 or $3 or something. Anyway, and this is way back in the 70s. So I didn't have any money, and it was a big problem. So I'm walking around the neighborhood thinking, I need to find $4. I need to get $4 together so I can buy this present, so I can not look like sort of a standout in showing up for Nigel's birthday party, right? And, you know, when you're like 10, 11, you know, that's sort of, you know, that's at that stage of your life where things are important to you. You know, reputations are being built, right?
That's great. And fitting in, right?
Yeah, you got to fit in. You got to fit in, or, well, you know, you're just trying to be like everybody else, you know? And, you know, I knew I wasn't like everybody else because I didn't have a mother and we didn't have too much money. And, you know, all the clothes that I ever got were handed down. I never bought, had new stuff. So I knew I was a little bit different. But anyway, Nigel could see through all of that. So we, you know, and he was from a wealthy family. So we were just friends, you know? So we had no barriers, sort of social barriers, right? Between our relationship, between Nigel and myself. But anyway, so I was walking around the neighborhood with this problem on my forehead, you know, for hours and hours and hours, and walked past this house, and there was this old lady outside, and she was trying to start the lawnmower. And old sort of a white-haired lady, nice lady. so I walked over to her and said, would you like some help getting that thing going? And she goes, oh, yeah, that'd be great. You don't want to cut the lawn, do you? I mean, I'll give you $10 if you can mow my lawn, right? And it was quite a large lawn. So it's like, yeah, sure, $10, yeah. so anyway, I mowed her lawn, and I said, well, why can't your husband do it, you know? And she goes, I'm trying to give away the work now, right? I'm trying to give away the income, right? But, you know, because I'm not trying to take money from people, you know, and it was sort of like, you know, trying to bring up five younger brothers and sisters, you know, you're more about caring for others rather than taking from others, right? So anyway, so I said, well, what about your husband? She said, my husband passed away 2 years ago, and I used to have somebody do my lawns, and they don't do it on a regular basis. So if you'd like to do it, I'd really appreciate it. I said, well, okay, I'll do that for you. So anyway, I mowed her lawns and sort of got the contract for it, you know.
Nice, yeah.
So I had an income source. Excuse me. And then so I got $10 and I spent $5 on $4 on the chocolates and $1 for the card. So yeah, I was like stoked, you know. I was like, oh my god.
$5 left over.
Yeah, I've got change even, you know. Anyway, so I went to the birthday party and everything, and just it was great. It was just like, wow, it's so cool to have money. You know, it's like the freedom, right? And then I realized at that point, you know, money's like energy. You know, it energizes things. Like it allows you to be mobile, right, in life. So that was my first sort of experience of making money and my first experience of business. And I think those couple of valuable lessons about, you know, not taking but giving, but giving something that's of value to another, and that the other is willing to pay you or compensate you for your work or your effort. I think that was important. So that was sort of like the basis of exchange, you know. Learning the basis of exchange.
Yeah.
And then also the idea that, you know, money energizes things, right? You can actually, you're mobile, you know, you're flexible. So it gives you freedom, you know, a sense of freedom to act, or the freedom to buy, just a mere fact of freedom to buy and be able to participate, you know, in things.
Yeah, contribute. And like, for example, you're giving a gift to someone, then, you know, that's making their day, right? Yeah. And you coming in and as a formality, you know, giving a gift, but it being your presence there too. I think something that was really cool, that what you're saying is – you came in with the idea of, I need $5, right? Or $4 for these chocolates. And he came out with 10.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think that's like a really cool, like little, like, not like a life lesson, but it's like a little gem, right? It's like you go out there and you if you put in the work, you'll be surprised. Sometimes maybe more comes back to you than what you were looking for originally.
Yeah, and I think that's sort of a, I guess it's almost like a spiritual thing in a way where, you know, well, I need $5, so I'm going to get $5, right? Mm-hmm. It really wasn't that. It was just that I saw somebody that needed help. So, you know, that's the other lesson. You know, if you see that you can help somebody, you will get the reward somewhere along the line. I didn't ask for $10. Mm-hmm. She offered $10, right? Mm-hmm. So I thought that was a very good thing. And I think, and you know, believe it or not, throughout my business career, that's always sort of been in the back of my mind of like how I approach new customers. You know, I'll ask them, well, how can I help you? And we'll talk about the help. We'll talk about the problem that they need help with and whether or not I can offer them a solution or not, you know. And it's always them that ask me how much it's going to cost them, uh-huh. Right? It's always them asking, you know, how much is the payment, or, you know, they're offering it up. I'm not saying, well, that's going to cost you blah. You know, I always wait for them to tell me, mm-hmm. or ask me, you know, what the sort of normal charge is for this, or what do we consider fair enough exchange, right? Mm-hmm.
Like you're like almost kind of a towards a way of like, you know, like being humble and gratitude,
yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, I see, you know, I've seen these hard sell guys. You know, these sort of like
very
guys,
pushy, yeah, like, yeah, like really the pushy stereotypical guys. Car salesman. And,
yeah. And they just, my God, they just, I'm fascinated by the way that they lose sales. You know, they just 100% lose sales because it's not hard sell, it's crush sell. Mm-hmm. You know, they just crush the enthusiasm out of somebody that's making an inquiry, you mm-hmm. know.
Yeah, well, I think when it comes to them, it's kind of finding out what stage the customer is in, right? Maybe someone is just really wanting to look, right? And they're like already throwing prices at, you know, it's like, oh, I just want to look around, you know?
Well, you know, I've always defined a hot prospect as somebody that was interested, you know, like, hey, I like that car. To me, that's a hot prospect. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when somebody says, oh, I'd like that car, you know, my next thing is, well, let's let you have it.
Yeah.
You know, how can we make it happen to let you have it? Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, no, that's a good way of looking at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's the same way that you were saying earlier, like, how do I help? Right?
Right.
How do I help you get what you want?
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's not about me, it's about you, right? Yeah. The customer.
Yeah.
Right? So anyway, so that was my first experience. So that's a good experience. Yeah, yeah, it was great. And so, you know, in life I went along and I got married when I was 17. And in New Zealand, you know, we used to do that. I had a son at 18, you know. And in New Zealand, we get married very young. Anyway, so my father-in-law says, what do you do for a living? And I was working in some place. And he says, no, you're not. You're going to be working on the docks, because he was the dock worker, right? Mm. Kind of like run like the mafia over there. He says, no, you're not. You show up at this place here. They're hiring crane drivers, right? Mm. Cranes that unload the ships. Mm-hmm. And by the time I was 19, I was making more money than a doctor.
Wow.
You know, and I was driving these big, huge container cranes and stuff.
Yeah,
and
well, it's technical. Yeah.
It's kind of, skill. You need skill and stuff. And I was, you know, we had these older fellas that were retiring. They needed to replace them out. So there's about 30 of us that were bought on at that time.
So you came at the perfect time, really.
Yeah, it was good timing. So we had a great time. I worked there for about 5 years, I think. But in the last year, I remember, you know, you're way up high. And when you work in the harbor and on ships, it's a majestic kind of an environment. because you talk, you know, it's all about size and scope and the ocean, and you've got things moving in and out, these big, huge structures of ships and things. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty majestic. But I remember in the last sort of couple of years, I was sort of sitting up there looking at this beautiful ocean and waiting for the dock workers down below to untie some freight or whatever it was. And I'm looking out there on a beautiful day and I'm thinking, oh my God, is this it? Is this life? Is this, I'm going to be doing this for the rest of my life, like the old guys that trained me, you know? And I'm thinking, I'm like 19.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm going, yeah, but, you know, and I'm arguing with myself, yeah, but, you know, you buy a new car every year. Mm-hmm. You're only 19. I mean, you know, you're making a fortune. Yeah.
Or it's stable income, right?
It's stable income. And it's like, yeah, I know. But it's like, my God, it's like, that's it. I mean, that's all I'm going to get is a steady job. So anyway, this sort of chewed on me for months, right? Mm-hmm. Anyway, I told my boss, I said, you know what? I think I'm going to, I don't know if I can handle this. He said, what are you talking about? You'll never get a job like this ever again in your life. And I go, I don't know if I want a job like this ever again in my life. I said, it's great. It's got all these benefits and this and that. I just feel trapped, you know, as an individual, I just feel trapped. Like I'm not creating anything. Mm.
It's a routine almost, right? Repeat, recycle, yeah.
Yeah, complete thing. And, you know, our biggest feature for the day when I was working down the docks, right, and the cranes and stuff was 20 to 12, like 20 minutes to 12 o'clock. Mm-hmm. So lunch was at 12 to 1. Mm-hmm. 20 minutes to 12, we were allowed to come down our cranes, right, turn things off, and we'd all jump in our cars and we'd take off to the pub. And we'd get over there and it'll be Joe Shout today. You know, we'd be in groups of like six or whatever, you know. Uh-huh. And it'll be Joe Shout today. So he's shouting, right? So there's like these big jugs of beer, and we'd each drink about two of these things, right?
In an hour. Gotta stay hydrated, right? Yeah.
Yeah, we would just be guzzling the stuff down and be like stagger out of this place at 12:45 because we had to drive back to the cranes, and we'd crawl up to the cab of the crane, and then, you know, the sun's starting to come through the window because it's the afternoon, and now we're sort of getting, it's like, you know, we're wasted basically. And, and then, you know, by 3 o'clock in the afternoon, we're sort of going through withdrawals and
sluggish
on the way, and I was like, oh my God. And we did that every day, you know, for about, I guess we were young and, you know, we could handle it physically.
Yeah.
Right. But that was kind of the highlight of the day, you know, just going to the pub with your mates, you know, and buying, getting some beers. But anyway, so I left that job, you know, and my God, my father-in-law threw me out of the house, you know. He says, you're insane, you know, you're losing the best opportunity you have in life. Anyway, so he threw me out, which is great because then I had to get my own apartment, ship my son and my wife over there, right? Because we're living at my father-in-law's place at the time. Mm-hmm. And anyway, we got our own space and we got independence. And then I started looking around and go, okay, well, you know, where's opportunity? And I ended up moving to Sydney, Australia, and buying a restaurant.
Yeah. So how did the idea pop up that you're like, because you're looking for opportunity?
Well,
right?
You know, a friend of mine from school, another friend from school, his dad owned a restaurant in Auckland, New Zealand, and they had just moved to, his father just moved to Sydney, just to seeking out other opportunities, right? So he was over there, and my friend said, so I was discussing with him, you know, or, you know, I'm not very happy with, you know, life, and I'd like something a bit more exciting. And so he says, why don't you go to Sydney and go see my dad, Bob, and see what what opportunities. I mean, he's a restaurant guy. Maybe he could get a restaurant or something. Maybe he can help you get into a restaurant and show you the restaurant ropes and stuff. And that's exactly what happened. I went there. I bought it was a restaurant that was for sale. And in Sydney, Australia, it had been closed. Mm-hmm. It had just been fully renovated. There was a couple of guys that owned it. They were partners, right? And one was an architect and the other one was a cook. And they had a falling out. So the architect who had put all the money into the renovations of the place yeah. put it up for sale. Mm-hmm. And it was advertised for $17,000. So I had my friend's dad, Bob, come and look at it. He says, oh, this would be great. The foot traffic was great. Didn't have to do anything to the inside of the place. The equipment was great. It was just, you could just open it up and away you go. Mm-hmm. So I bought that for $17,000. I borrowed $7,000 from my family, you know, back in New Zealand, my sister and stuff, and scraped up money that we'd put together and got the final payment from the bank manager up the road from the restaurant. Mm-hmm. I went in there and I said, I need like $5,000 to complete the thing. He said, what are you buying? And he was an old school bank manager, right? He was about to retire. And he said, what are you buying? He says, I'm buying the McClay Cafe down the street. He said, McClay Cafe, I go there every day for lunch. You going to buy that place? Great. It's been closed for a while. I'll lend you the $5,000 unsecured. You pay it back in 2 years.
That's awesome. What a great deal.
He was a great guy. Yeah. He says, yep. I said, well, lunch is on the house.
Yeah.
You know? So anyway, I bought it for $17,000 and built the business up. Bob taught me how to cook and the whole restaurant game and stuff. It was great. Hired some waitresses, you know, all that sort of stuff. It was surrounded by hotels in this particular area in King's Cross in Sydney. So there's hotels, a lot of tourists and stuff like that. So I had some of the chefs from some of the other hotels come down and teach me some of their fancy dishes.
Oh, right? Okay.
Yeah. So I learned some really cool dishes down there and started putting them on the menu. Anyway, I had it for 18 months and I sold it for $100,000.
How long did it take?
18 months.
18 months, wow.
And it was like, wow. And I sold it after 18 months because it was like, oh, my God, I had no idea. I had no idea how hard the restaurant game is.
Oh, yeah.
It's 7 days a week,
yeah.
14 hours a day, and I was so beat up after 18 months. I could hardly feel my feet on my feet.
Because right? You're walking around so much.
On my feet all the time, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I sold it for $100,000 and somebody came in and it was a surgeon guy that wanted a business for his wife. And so he bought it from me and that was it. So the number one lesson, the business lesson I learned out of that business was a very simple principle of just give people what they want. Mm-hmm. Don't argue with them. Just if they say they want bacon and eggs at 10 o'clock at night, cook them bacon and eggs at 10 o'clock at night.
Is that a real example?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Because we're in this kind of Las Vegas section of Sydney. Uh-huh. So you have a lot of the people, like the musicians and some of the girls and so forth, the artists and that sort of thing. They work late. Mm-hmm. So they get up to go to work at 10 o'clock at night, you know, because they're going to be up all night.
That's breakfast, right?
It's breakfast time. You know, and people are pretty traditional.
Yeah.
But that was a great example of, like, just give people what they want, you know. And that was the lesson I learned that, and it's another lesson and another principle that I apply to all my businesses that I've had since then, right? Just give people what they want. And we apply it to the bag business. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's exactly what, you know, it's one of these true and tried principles, you know, in business. Don't mm-hmm. argue with people. Just find out what they want and then give it to them.
Yeah.
Pretty straightforward.
No, definitely. Yeah. I think I have a question for you. When it comes to an entrepreneur or someone with that mindset, what percent do you think is people are just born with it? Or do you have to learn from it, or you're put into a circumstance, like, yeah, where you kind of are having to learn as you go because you have no other choice. So I'm curious to see what you kind of think about that.
It's a really good question. Okay, so I have a discussion with my sister. Now, my sister, she's 2 years younger than I. Her and her husband are multimillionaires, mm-hmm. and they built their fortune in a real estate business. Actually, Brian was a partner in a restaurant in New Zealand. So he learned his way around business from the restaurant, and my sister was a waitress at the restaurant. Mm-hmm. And then they got together and so forth and created their life together. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but they got into the real estate business and very, very successful. Both of them very successful. And I look at my other brothers and sisters. They were all very successful in business. I have an older brother that worked for Coca-Cola and traveled around the world setting up operations and managing units in Europe and South Pacific Islands and all that sort of stuff. Wow. He was very successful. I had another brother who was he spent most of his adult life in prison. Well, not most of it, but a lot of it. But he was a very renowned safe cracker. Right?
Yeah.
He was very renowned in the criminal circles. He was
so very famous, like everyone knew of him?
Yeah. In fact, it is.
Like, would he be like legendary status? Where, like, if you want to get into it.
He was kind of legendary. Yeah. He was kind of legendary.
That's pretty cool, yeah.
Unfortunately, he passed away, and I remember going to his funeral, and there was these people. There was a car park opposite the church, and I had all these people lined up on the top of this car park. And I said to my sister, "Who are they?" He says, "Oh, that's the detectives and police people. They're trying to find out who's attending the funeral."
Oh, because they're probably like, "Oh, my respects, right? Yeah, I learned a lot from you." Yeah.
So he had his own reputation, and then I had another brother and a sister, brothers and sisters that were very successful at what they did. I had our youngest brother. Was a New Zealand surf champion.
New Zealand what?
Surf champion.
Surf, wow.
And had another younger sister who's brilliant, brilliant marketer and stuff. Another one that worked for a newspaper in London or something. And have another younger brother who works in Dubai. He's been there for 30 years. He's mm-hmm. a ship captain, and he takes care of one of the royal families, their fleet of boats and things. So wow. He manages all that.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've all been really pretty successful, you know, coming from nothing. So we've all sort of been good at something. So anyway, back to the thing of your question. So I'm sitting there, I'm talking to my sister, and we're talking about my real estate sister.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you know, I've realized why we're so successful, why we individually have our own success and stuff, it's because, you know, we learned about survival because, you know, we were basically brought up in the wild because we're looking at our children, right? And I'm mm-hmm. going, oh my God, the opportunities that we've given our kids to like start business or do this or do that. And there's no uptake, you know. There's no uptake. And it's like, you know, I realize, and, you know, and some of the kids have problems, you know, social problems, mental problems, you know. They're not all like that, but, you know, more so than what we ever had. We didn't have problems. We never had time to have problems. But I'm kind of like sort of talking to her about this and sort of like zooming out of this whole subject of like, what's different about us to them, you know, our mm-hmm. own offspring, right? And I kind of concluded with her and I said, well, I guess what it is that we grew up in the wild, so we figured out how to survive. And we've brought our children up in captivity because we've never wanted them to go through what we went through.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. And to that degree, this is what we have. We've brought these children up in captivity, and that's all they know.
Mm-hmm.
So to answer your question, I think it's a very important lesson. You know, it's just sheer survival that really drives an individual to make it,
mm-hmm.
you know, or not.
Yeah, I think it's like there's this quote, and I'm forgetting the history from it, but it's like you burn the ships, right? I think it was when Hernando Cortez came to Mexico for the first time, and everyone was like, okay, we got to go, and we're going to get the gold or whatever, right? But mm-hmm. people were scared. They're like, no, I want to go back, right? So they literally burned the ships, and they're like, the only way we're getting off this island is using their ships, right? So it's like a need, right?
Right.
Like there was no fallback. There was no plan B. It was either you make, you know, your success the way that you have it. Because I feel like when you're looking for something, right? Your $5, right? Your mind's already attuned into a way of, in a different perspective to receive the different opportunities that are there.
Right.
Right? So when you're put in a position where it's like, there's no plan B, I'm getting those $5, or I'm getting, I have to go get those ships, right? You're put in a position where there is no plan B.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's a that's been something interesting.
What's the saying? Yeah. You know, failure is not an option, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the other thing I read the other day, you know, in passing was the fact that, you know, you have to dream it. You have to dream it first. Like, mm-hmm. you know, that looking for that $5, I'm trying mm-hmm. to, in my mind, I'm trying to bring it.
Or visualize it.
And bring it into like, well, how would I get this thing? Or, you know, I'm walking around with this picture on my forehead of like, you know, I guess it's sort of this undeveloped film,
mm-hmm.
you know, type of thing. But, I think you have to dream it. And I think, you know, imagination, you have to have imagination.
Mm-hmm. It's not like you're forced to, right? But it's
it's the solution. I think it's the natural solution.
Yeah.
I think it's mm-hmm. the natural, maybe we're hitting on something here, but maybe it's a natural phenomena of survival.
Or an outcome, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The ability to dream it, you have to think of it first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to sort of visualize it, like you're saying, visualize it, and then figure out, well, how can I bring this into being,
mm-hmm.
right? And maybe that's the purpose of an individual or something. You know, maybe we get down to the core basis of who an individual is, somebody mm-hmm. who can visualize something and bring it into being, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's every successful business or entrepreneur came with that mindset,
mm-hmm.
right? Of visualizing. They're like with Apple, right? It's like their whole core value is integrate, you know, humans with technology,
yeah.
right? How do you do that? I don't think I've seen anybody without their phone, you know, in a very long time. It's very rare you find someone that doesn't have a phone on them, right? It's like almost it is an integration, right? And then you think of, okay, well, how does one do that, right? How does that happen, right? So,
well, you know, that's very interesting to say that because I'm walking around Davis here and everybody's got a phone. Everybody's walking down the street with
a phone. Not even looking at the road, yeah.
And I'm going, oh, my God. You know, I can't wait to the day, you know, when I get out of the business world, and I just want to throw that thing as far away as possible. I want nothing, you know. You know, when I was a kid, just mm-hmm. so you know, when I was a kid, you know, like we were growing up, I was 10 kids, right? So our grandmother used to live up in this beautiful part of New Zealand called the Bay of Islands, and there was no road there. There was no electricity there, right?
Mm-hmm.
The water we had to get from a well. The bathroom was an outhouse, mm-hmm. and the shower was the ocean,
mm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And there was no food. The food was like in the ocean
mm-hmm.
or oysters on the rocks, right?
Yeah.
That was it. You know, she used to get flour, sugar, and tea leaves, right? She used to get those three items once a month when a boat used to show up, you know, off the beach and we'd have to row out and they'd throw the flower things in the back and we'd row back in again.
Yeah.
That would be it. And it was like, it was total isolation. And as children, oh my God, it was such a romantic upbringing.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sure a lot of people would be jealous of that. Because it's like,
I think that's what saved our sanity, you know?
Yeah, with all the flashiness going around now, like sometimes, like you were saying, I just want to throw the damn phone away and go back and like have peace, right? Just simple. Yeah. And there's a beauty in that, right?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah. There's so much beauty in that.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking about this, you know, a little bit back, and I thought to myself, my God, I'm really in business so I can live like I did as a child with nothing. That's really what I want. Yeah. I basically want to live like I did when I was a child and had nothing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm working towards.
Yeah.
That's why this business is being created and why, you know, what this money is going to be used for. And it's like, oh my God, you know, it's just, it's a full circle. Life is a full circle, I guess, you know, because I don't want anything. I just don't want nothing.
You know? Yeah, just and have we simplicity.
Were happy. Yeah. Yeah, we were happy. I mean, as children, we had such wonderful times. You know, we used to have this pear tree. That there was one pear tree in the whole place, right? There's the only fruit in the whole place. It's all seafood, right? Because we're fishing people.
Mm-hmm.
This one pear tree, and us kids, every summer would go up there, and there'd be one pear hanging off this thing. And it was way up high, so we couldn't like climb up and grab it. And we would wait all summer for this thing to ripen. And then we would, as soon as it looked a little bit red, you know, it had one of these red tints to it,
mm-hmm.
we'd be getting sticks, right? We'd be getting sticks, and we'd be all like trying to aim for it, right? And trying to hit this thing off of there, right? And we'd be weeks trying to like hit, and because it's not ripe yet, so it's hanging on there, you know, the pear's got, he's not going to go anywhere, right?
No, it's stubborn, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's not ready to fall off. So we're just there and hacking away at it, and then finally somebody hits it and it falls off, and we all take a bite each, and it's hard as hell. But, you know, it was wonderful, you know, and it was, my God, it was such a wonderful romantic life as a kid, you know. You know, my grandmother, if any of us would fall over and skin our knees like we'd always do or get cut or on an oyster shell or something, we'd come home, be crying, and she would just walk us over to the beach and throw us into the tide, you know. So there you go. Just go for a swim for an hour, you know. That cut will be fine afterwards, you know.
It'll burn in the moment, but it's true. Yeah, it will help. Yeah, it does really help. Yeah, salty water.
So we have a beautiful experience. Yeah. A wonderful experience.
Yeah. I think that ties back to what we were saying earlier. I think there's just so much flashy stuff going on. And what you were saying that people are starting to get like depressed or come up with all these things. It's because there's so much as opposed to like you go to different, like if I go to Mexico, right? I've done a missions trip in Mexico and we go to, you know, we go to the more like not so well off places because we want to build homes for people that can't, you know, and they actually get the money to buy the little property, but then the church comes in and builds the home, right? So I think that's a really cool thing where it's like 50-50, right? Instead of just giving something to someone, it's their
it's a contribution, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and I think that's a very beautiful thing. But you look at these people and they have nothing and they're so happy.
Yep.
And I think it might be a culture thing too, cuz you know, I think Mexican people they tend to just always look at the positive side of things, which I think is very, very beautiful. Like, you know, like no matter what, it's going to be okay. But it's very simple, right? They live these simple lives. And I bet if we go to other third world countries, it's probably the same. I bet it's the same mentality of you know, we're happy with what we have. Yeah. At least we have a roof over our heads, right? They look at gratitude.
Yeah.
And I think when we have so many options available here in the United States, we're so blessed for that, right? But people forget to stop and look at and being thankful just that we have this opportunity. Like, for example, I'm super thankful to have the opportunity to have a podcast with you today.
Yeah, yeah.
Or I'm super thankful that my car was able to start today and I was able to drive over, right? Or I was able to go to the gym. Some people, you know, it's like or just breathe, right? Just exist. Mm. So I think that's a big part of it too. Like hearing your story too, it's just being just grateful for the simple things, you know, instead of having all this stuff and a lot of marketers coming in and saying, "Oh, you need this to be happy. You need the new Jordans, you know, you need these new shoes to be happy." Right. So I don't know if that.
No, that's a great observation, you know, mm-hmm. and it is about contribution and it's about appreciation for things, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, it's values, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really, it's talking about values. Yeah.
We've talked about that a lot. Yeah.
What do people value? What's important to them that they value?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, maybe young people today, they get driven off of what a real value is,
mm-hmm.
you know, by consuming so much, you know, media or something, you know, TikTok and all that sort of stuff.
Well, yeah, that's a whole different thing, you know, over shortening their attention spans.
Well, yeah, that's right. It's sort of like, because it's just really, you know, it's just, it's a different value set,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
It's just a very different value set.
Do you think it's a problem then for businesses like to always want to directly tailor to the customer? Because like if I'm wanting to build an app, right, what do I want? I'm mm-hmm. buying attention
mm-hmm.
and I want them to be constantly on the app, right? Mm-hmm. So I guess in business, there's always has to be an ethical side to it and a moral side to it, right? Where it's like, okay, well, if I need to have like Instagram or something, I need them to be addicted to it. I need them to constantly go on so then people can put their ads in and then Instagram gets money that way, mm-hmm. right? So how do you think businesses should go about that? Because that is kind of what we're doing. We're just tailoring like to people that want to have just shorter attention spans of attention. That's what TikTok, right? We're just catering to that. So where do you draw the line and how can businesses help influence maybe a better future? And I don't think it's solely on the businesses. I think a lot of it has to do with like maybe government or you know, in society as a whole.
Mm.
But where do you think you kind of stand on that from what I've said?
Well, you know,
a tricky subject. Yeah.
Yeah, it is because we're talking about a generational thing. And, you know, we had, like I was saying, you know, some of our siblings, you know, they've got issues.
Mm-hmm.
I had, you know, one of my sister's husband passed away a couple of years ago, and I was back in New Zealand, and her son, who was quite close to the father, sort of had cloistered himself away and sort of retreated from, you know, family and that sort of thing. So it was very introverted, right? So I went, when I was in New Zealand, I said, "Hey, Oliver, you know, I understand, you know, sorry to hear about your dad, because, you know, I liked them. His name was Grandma. I liked his dad a lot. Anyway, so I said, why don't you come, I'm going to buy you a ticket. I want you to come to California and just come on over and just, you know, just stay with us and you can just hang out with us, you know. So bought him a ticket and he came over and stuff like that. And so I knew he was introverted, so I'm trying to like just find out where this kid's at.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so I bought him an iPad and everything. He's a very good artist. The mm-hmm. kid was a very good artist, like he with a pencil, right? Mm-hmm. Very good artist. And it's like, wow. So, you know, he's got talent, right? So, mm-hmm. wow, that's cool. And, you know, and we were talking and stuff. He said, yeah, Dad always liked my drawings and stuff like that. I said, yeah, I can see why. This is awesome.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then we talk about his dad a little bit and he liked music and, you know, his dad liked the same music I liked and this sort of thing. So, you know, just sort of building up some rapport. So, you know, I went out and bought him an iPad, a new iPad, so he can, I said, why don't we figure out how to transfer, you know, your images instead of using a pencil, where we can use it, would transfer it so it's digital, so your art becomes digital. And so we did that and, you know, got him some programs and stuff like that. And then we got him connected with, it's a little thing that, design thing that you can actually do designs and they'll print it for you or make T-shirts out of them for you or make different merch type things mm-hmm. using your designs,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, definitely.
So I get him connected to that, and, you know, he put things online. Of course, we bought them, you know. We bought a bunch of his T-shirts mm-hmm. and things, and it was great. I said, good, look yeah. at that. You're set up. You're actually in business now.
Yeah.
You can actually, your talent can be turned into income for you, if you mm-hmm. like. You know, you can sell this stuff and blah, blah, blah. So I bought these T-shirts, and there was a little notebook thing and that he had created this art about with his horse on the front and stuff. And I gave them as presents to some of our customers, and they were pumped. They thought this stuff was awesome, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, I'd tell them and give them the feedback and all that sort of stuff. So it was really fun. So he was over here for about 3 weeks and just sort of, you know, destimulating almost, right? Mm-hmm. Just sort of getting him to see, hey, there's another world out here.
Yeah.
And there's yeah. other people out here, mm-hmm. and people really like what you do.
Yes, yeah, opening up
and,
that
you
perspective.
You got a talent.
Yeah.
You got a talent. So then he went back to New Zealand, and he just sort of disappeared into the ether again. Mm. And, you know, I'd written to him a couple of times, got some cryptic messages back and that sort of thing. But I think that what he slipped back into is exactly what you're talking about with this thing with young people who are just sort of like frivolously entertained by weird stuff.
Yeah, well, we consume a lot, right?
Yeah,
we
like
consume
weird a lot stuff of rather than real stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like things that are strange mm-hmm. rather than things that are like beautiful. Mm-hmm. I think that and maybe that's where sort of – and. You know, just watching him sort of slide back into that, it was sort of like, oh, it's scary being a young person today. I think it's scary.
Yeah. Well, I've seen a lot.
Gee, where's
yeah.
this? You know, I'm like, where's this all heading?
Yeah.
You know. Anyway, that was my experience with.
Yeah, but I think that's kind of hitting with what I think businesses should try to do, right? Like. And I might go into talking about the charity that you have, but you know, helping people get themselves set up, and more importantly than that is at least they had the opportunity to look at that perspective they haven't before.
Correct.
Because maybe maybe they go back, right? But at least they know that they've seen that and that you've given them the opportunity to look at the world in that way.
And they can't unsee it.
Uh-huh, they can't unsee it as opposed to never having the opportunity to.
Correct. And,
yeah.
You know, you were talking about, you know, being thankful for what you have. You know, I was in India a couple of years ago, traveled throughout India on business, right? And I remember walking through, we'd done our business for the day, we're up in the office, we came back down, the guy says, hey, we're going out to dinner. So I remember walking with one of my colleagues in the back streets of Calcutta. Mm-hmm. You know, it was dark. And we were walking through the back streets, and there were people sort of sitting on the stairs. There was old people. There were young people. And walking down this alleyway, right, this dark alley. Well, it wasn't dark. Well, it was kind of dark, but I didn't feel any – I wasn't afraid. You know, I didn't have this afraid vibe, you know. I know if I was doing the same thing in some alley in Los Angeles, right?
Different story, maybe.
Yeah, it'd be a different story. And I've been down dark alleys when I was used to be in the film business, and we'd have to use, you know, the director would always want to choose one of these urine-soaked alleys in Los Angeles, right, to shoot in, right? It's like, oh, God, here we go again. But anyway, the vibe was like, you know, it was interesting because there were old people talking to young people. There was young people talking to old people. Mm. And they were sitting there, you know, maybe some having a cigarette or they're just chatting. But it was like I'm walking down this alleyway and it's like, yeah, you know, look at this. You know, people are just, they've accepted, you know, they're happy with what they got. Mm-hmm. And if what they got is a conversation, they're happy that they've got a conversation.
Yeah.
You know? I thought, wow, this is really fascinating. And, you know, India was a very fascinating place because of that. People do accept what they have. Mm-hmm. I mean, we visited people that were very wealthy, and, you know, we walked the streets with people that were very poor, right? And a fascinating place, but to your point about, you know, people accepting of what they've got and appreciate and just sort of like, you know, they're not reacting, you know, reacting in such a way of like, you know, there's no sort of hatred being built up around, you know, what they have and what they don't have, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think in places like that, the importance that they put on is different. I tend to think there it's more community based.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah. Here it might be more materialistic, and we're starting to fade away from realizing how important it is to gain the experience and knowledge and overall just good conversation with different kinds of people.
Yeah.
Right? Like for my generation, it's usually very rare do I find others wanting to look for mentors or just having people that they talk to that might be, older in a general basis, or maybe younger, right? I mean, it's still important to gain different perspectives. It seems like it's very clicky.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But you know that example of walking down that alleyway made me think of like these people are not rejecting. You know, they're not rejecting the idea that they can have more or be better or to grow, right? So they're not rejecting that outright, you know. It's just that, you know, nobody's offering that opportunity, and that sort of goes into that, you know, the charity we started, my wife and I started, called the Mirrors to Windows thing, Mirrors to Windows Foundation.
Yeah. Can you say the story behind it? It's a really good story.
Well, you know, when I was... I decided to create this thing with my wife, this foundation, and it was sort of built on this idea of, you know, when I was growing up, you know, and my circumstances. I remember being in secondary school, and you know, we didn't have very much, you know, as a family. I didn't have it as an individual. I had nothing, you know. I didn't have a savings account or anything, you know. And, you know, I sort of look back at kind of life and I realized that, you know, nobody really came up to me in college or anything like that or in secondary school and said, you know, how would you like to be a lawyer? Or how would you like to be a pilot? You know, how would you like to be successful in business? Nobody ever came up to me and asked me if I would. And, of course, you know, as a young person that sort of had this idea of like, well, things can be better. Like life doesn't have to be as miserable as hard as what we were going through as a family. You know, it doesn't have to be that hard, you know. And just those experiences of those little tiny experiences of earning money and interacting with those folks and having those experiences. But... It didn't have to be that hard, but you know, I look back at it and think, oh, you know, it would have been nice if somebody had come along and says, hey, do you need some help with something? What do you need? You need some flight. I'd love to be a pilot, by the way. I think being a pilot is just such a wonderful thing, and to have the skill to be able to do it. I remember actually I joined the air training corps when I was a kid, when I was about 14. And with schools, friends at school, you know, because we all went along and we got a free uniform.
Oh, that's cool.
They used to, it was a sort of a spin-off thing from the New Zealand Royal Air Force, right? And they were, I guess they were sort of trying to cultivate the next generation of flyers, right? So we used to go on the weekends, we used to go to the Air Force Base and we'd be on their simulators or they'd take us up gliding, you know, we'd be in the back seat and, you know, with the pilots, and we'd just have experience. And as a young kid, it was great, but it got expensive because we had to start paying for things, you know. Then I had to drop out because I couldn't afford the things, you know, the fees and things that we would needed to do trips and that. So I dropped out, but I used to love it. I remember sitting in a Hercules simulator, you know, flying this big Hercules transporter, you know. I don't know, what do you call them over here, like C-150s or whatever they are, big transport.
Yeah, I just call them heavies, big heavies.
Big heavies, yeah. Oh, it was so fun and gliding and stuff. It was so wonderful. Yeah. And so I'd always had that sort of as a young kid, you know, wanting to have that opportunity. But I think flying, but, you know, nobody said to me at school, you know, would you like to be a pilot?
Mm-hmm.
And I would have, like, jumped at them, you know, and said, well, look, we're going to pay for your private pilot's license. How about that? You know, I would, if that was, you know, I'd be flying for Air New Zealand, you know, when I'd be 20 years old. So I wouldn't have to be driving a crane, right? On the waterfront, wondering what the hell am I going to do with my life? Is this it?
Oh, well, no noon beer runs, though. That'd be the one take. Yeah. That'd be the one fallback. You wouldn't have that.
Yeah, that's true. But anyway, so I decided to form this thing. I mean, it was built on the basis of a quote, wherein the purpose of education is explained as turning mirrors into windows, right? So the idea is that, you know, when an individual is just sort of looking at himself, you can't really see much except self, right?
Mm-hmm.
But education actually turns that mirror into a window where you're looking outward at other things. And I think, you know, this is where sort of international travel and learning about things and, you know, getting exposed to new experiences and things, I think that's what that kind of means, right? So my wife and I decided, oh my gosh, why don't we create an opportunity for young folk to, we can see what we can do to help them, give them sort of some kind of a help to, you know, take on new experiences or learn new things or just sort of open up their minds to new opportunities, you know, in life with regards to, you know, a direction.
Mm-hmm. Or the perspective, right?
Perspective.
What you're saying, yeah.
Opening up
a perspective.
You know, if kids need, you know, if they need, they can't do something or, you know, like let's say somebody wants to be a truck driver, you know, like, okay, well, how much does it cost to learn how to get your truck driver's license? Well, it's, you know, it's $1,000 or whatever. Okay, well, you know, maybe we could fund that, you know, or somebody needs to be wants to be a pilot, you know, and he needs to some training lessons or something. Okay, well, how much is that? Let's see what we can do about funding that, you know. So that's the idea of the whole thing, and the whole thing is to give people opportunity to be able to do the things that they have a passion for.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know, you know, from my personal perspective, if that's the case, then they'll make a life out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's all about, well, what would you like to do? What would you like to do in life that gets you out of bed in the morning, right? That you just, and you know, I had an old friend of mine who had a flight school down in Los Angeles, and I asked him, you know, I said, so what gets you? Why did you want to be a pilot? Because he was a pilot for California Airlines way back when.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, what made you be a pilot? He says, I just wanted a job that woke me up in the morning and I just had the desire to get out there and do it, you know, and flying was it for me, you know. So I think that, you know, that a lot of people are like that. You know, what is it? What is it that they want to get out of bed in the morning and just can't wait to get to their activity of the day?
Because you're going
to
do that for the rest of your life, like the realization you had on the crane.
Yeah, and it's like, what's that? What's the saying? You know, there's a common saying that says, you know, find something that you really love doing and you'll never have to work a day in your life ever again.
Yeah.
You know, Anyway, so the foundation is sort of like we're trying to structure it around that. That's the sort of philosophy of it, you know, mm-hmm. turning those mirrors into windows, you know, yeah. windows of opportunity for people.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, for me, it's become so much, I mean, way more evident. I mean, because, I mean, I was just out of the indoctrination of, you know, K through, you know, 12th grade, that there's just so many opportunities out there that just school isn't teaching.
Yeah.
And if you're not resourceful, if you don't put yourself out there, you're never going to know all these jobs exist where it doesn't feel like it's a job to you, right? I never felt I had that opportunity in school. However, my mom did a great job at raising me. Like, we don't come from a lot of money, but my mom, she used to when she's from Mexico, but she always said, if you want something done, it's going to get done. We just have to figure out how,
mm-hmm.
right? Like mm-hmm. almost like a mentality of like abundance, like, mm-hmm. like all these things are there. And so she always put me in great different like activities. And one of the best ones for me was Boy Scouts.
Mm-hmm.
And, I wanted to as a young kid, and she was like, no, not yet. You know? And then when I was older, I didn't want to do it, but it was probably the best thing that I ever did in my entire life. It was just a great like formation of what being a citizen, what does it mean to be a servant to your community,
right?
And all these principles. And I was able to have the opportunity. That was really the first place to look at mentors and look at people and say, wow, the qualities that these people have and the way that they carry themselves is remarkable. Like, what do they do? What is it that made them that way, you know? And I ended up finding out all the people that I looked up to in the majority, except for two, they were all in aviation. They were all pilots.
Mm, wow.
Yeah. And I said, okay, well, if I want to have the same toolbox as they have in their brain, right, I'm going to go into aviation.
Yeah.
But school would have never mentioned that to me.
Yeah.
I would have never known, you know? And I think the most important thing you can do, like what you were saying, is giving the opportunity of having people change their perspective of this is really what the world has to offer, not mm-hmm. just this slim window that school is showing you, because they just want you to go to college. And then really, when you go to university, you're kind of in debt, you know? You kind of become like a it's very hard to get out, you know? So maybe you don't get the same freedom as someone else.
No, that's right.
That maybe didn't go through it, but isn't having to have that burden on their shoulders, right? So I think that's really great what you're doing, just helping people, telling them there's more to what school's been teaching you. There's we're in a place where that's actually possible, right? Like if we go somewhere else in a different country, we're saying it's like, that's it, right? This is just what it is, like what you're saying when you went to India. Here it's different. But we're being clouded with all this stuff, yeah. you know, and we're not being told about it. Yeah, so I think this is really great what you're doing. I really admire it.
Well, you know, you got to get back. You know, when you get older in life, you realize that, like, hey, you know, you've been either carved the opportunity out yourself, right, which largely are done. Or there's been people that have met you, you've met along the way, that have sort of like encouraged you or shown you different perspectives of things, you know. So for those people, you know, we're eternally like Bob, the restaurant guy, right, mm-hmm. that taught me everything about
yeah.
the restaurant.
Yeah, he was your mentor.
Yeah, and yeah. He was an alcoholic. But he still managed through all of that to teach me how to run a very successful business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he died several years after I'd sold the business of, he just died as a drunk, you know. He had his personal problems and all that sort of stuff, and it wasn't something that I was sort of capable of dealing with.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can learn from the worst of us. You know, it's like my brother that spent a lot of his, the safecracker guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, you can learn from him. He was such a charming fellow. You know, everybody he met loved him.
Mm-hmm.
Right, even the cops, you know, when he when he passed away, you know, they
yeah.
were there speaking to his daughter, his young daughter, saying, you know, I took care of your son.
Wow.
He was a good inmate. You know, mm-hmm. they actually had a lot of respect for him because mm-hmm. he had a sense of, he sort of had a strange sense, moral sense. You know, mm-hmm. even as an inmate, right? That you don't do that and you don't do that. There's certain rules to being a criminal, right?
You
don't cross the line there, and you don't do that, and you know. So they admired him. Even the guards used to admire him. You know, like. Mm-hmm. Because he'd run things and organize things so it wasn't destructive,
mm-hmm.
you know. But anyway, so everybody has their talents. You can learn from anybody, you know, mm-hmm. so long as they have good intentions. You know, they mean well. And you know, my brother Chaz, I mean, he was just a charmer. You know, that's what I learned from him. It's like just be nice to people. You know, forget about your own personal issues.
Mm-hmm.
Just be nice to people, you know. So that was it. But you know, along talking about education, you know, and business, right? So I studied we called it commercial practice then, right? I took 1 year of commercial practice, and the only reason I took this class is because it had a good looking teacher in it. Right? She was great. And she was a very nice, she was like the ideal woman, right? she was attractive, and she was gracious, mm-hmm. and she was kind,
mm-hmm.
right? And realize I've got no mother in the house, right? And I'm looking at this and go, oh my God, what a beautiful lady this is, you know?
Yeah.
So I took her class, uh-huh. right? And she's talking, and it's commercial practice, so it's about bookkeeping and, you know, and that sort of thing. So I did really well at that class, you know, to talk about.
You have to, yeah.
Yeah. Like she goes, you know why it's important to learn how to count, like math, right? Why is it important to know math and understand math? And, you know, I go, I have no idea. She goes, she tells the class, right? She goes, okay, you need to know about decimals and things. So when you go to the store and you get your change, you need to know that it's correct, right?
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, if you don't know, you know. So anyway, these little basics like that, right? So she was a real darling. So I did really well at that. And then on math, it was a funny part of part of my life where the system was changing. For New Zealand, they changed it over to a metric system, right smack in our last year of secondary school, right?
Wow, yeah.
So we went from, you know, the imperial mm-hmm. system to the last year, everything's metric. And I think I got 9 out of 100 on my math test. Because I think we all
scored really poor.
We had no idea what they were talking about. Meters, you know, it's, well, how many feet's that? You know, mm-hmm. like we were all feet and inches and mm-hmm. stuff, right? So we got screwed, right? So then people asked me, you know, why are you so successful in business? I said, well, by accident, really, because, you know, when I was studying math at school, you know, we got up to, we did addition and multiplication, but we never got to division and subtraction.
You learned the important stuff. Yeah.
So we only learned the first two.
Yeah.
We don't know how to divide or subtract.
Yeah. We never knew that was existed. So that was part of our perspective in life. Yeah. That's how we looked at life.
Anyway.
That's funny. That's good. Yeah. Well, I think we're coming to an end of the podcast. We've been going for a little bit over an hour, but it didn't even feel like that. Yeah.
Oh my God. We need to edit half of it out.
No, I think it was great. Is there any last final thoughts or things that you want to say to anybody listening out there, maybe interested in getting the business or anything like that?
Well, I tell you what. Here's my business basics, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so I came up with this formula or this thing, where I figured out what are the basics of business, like any business. You can apply it to any business. So what's the fundamentals, right? And the first fundamental is whatever you do, be honest, right? Just be honest. Because every successful business has a foundation of being honest or honesty. Okay, so be honest, that's the first thing. And I've drawn up this chart. Maybe I'll put it in a book or something like that. But the first thing you have to have is you have to have technology, or you have to have a thing or product, right? So if you've got a thing or product or technology, it's the first thing you have to do. And this thing has to be real, and it has to be of value, or it has to work.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be a real thing. Like, let's say we call it technology, right? So the next thing is, in the sequence of business, is you have to have marketing. And what people often don't understand about marketing, it's very simple. It has the purpose of creating demand, right? That's all it does, is to create demand. So whatever marketing format you're trying to use, if it doesn't result in, if the outcome isn't demand for the product, for the technology or the thing, then you haven't marketed, or your marketing is a failure, or you're doing something wrong. So with that in mind, if you understand that the purpose of all marketing is really just to create a demand,
mm-hmm.
right? Create want, right? So the next activity is sales, right? People don't understand. They mix up marketing and sales all the time. They're confused about it. Sales is all about the transaction, right? It's not about cross-selling people or forcing people or anything. It's just about the transaction. You know, is it going to be check, card, terms, whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because marketing should have already done the selling part of it, mm. right? Marketing, the person's already created the, you've already created the want. So the guy says, yeah, I want it. Say, great. Well, how do you want to pay for it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, credit card, cash, da, 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 da. That's sales, right? Mm-hmm. It's the transaction. The fourth thing is delivery, okay? If you can't deliver the thing, the product, or the service, or whatever it is that you've marketed and created and people want it, and you've taken their money for it, and if you can't deliver that now, okay,
mm-hmm.
People are going to say, well, it either doesn't exist, or I want my money back, or mm-hmm. you've ripped me off. So delivery is very, very important. That means get it into the hands of the client or the customer. Just get it into the hands. So delivery is very, very important. Okay, so the fifth thing is customer success. You have to ensure, as part of the business cycle, you have to ensure that your customers are having success with that technology, that product, that thing, that service that you've marketed and sold and delivered to them, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have to have success with it. So you need to make sure that they're having success. And if they're not having success, maybe they didn't understand which switch to use or how to turn it on or turn it off, or they didn't know how to use it or whatever. You have to make sure that they're having success, mm-hmm. and don't leave them until they are having success.
Mm-hmm. So stay in touch.
Some people just sell, right, and then just
leave.
And that goes back to that lawn mowing exercise. You got to care, right?
Mm-hmm.
You do a good job, right? Make sure that whatever you, because you don't want to be selling something that nobody wants, right? Or something that nobody needs, right?
Mm-hmm.
So make sure that they're having success with the product, because that factor right there will give you return business. So then the cycle continues, right? So repeat business, and just like in the restaurant business, it wasn't really, Bob taught me this, Drunkard Bob. He said, look, John, it doesn't matter, you know, if they just bought a coffee. It's like when they come back again and they buy a meal, and then they bring their friends in and they bring the family in, and the next thing you know, the place is packed out. And this is exactly what happened in the restaurant.
Mm.
Don't worry about what, it's not about a sale, the first sale. It's the second and the third and the fourth. That's where you make your money, right? Mm-hmm. That's where the money is made. So that repeat business. So this cycle, right? I call it the business cycle. You have the thing, the technology, the service, the product, right? You market it so people want it. You transact, you sell the thing so you get the transfer. So the money is in the till. You deliver the product so everybody's happy. You put the meal on the table. It's like, wow, this looks great. You know, it tastes great. And, you know, the customer's really happy with it. How was that? Oh, that was awesome. That was the best. That was the best fish or the best hamburger, the best piece of pepper steak that I've ever had in my life. It's wonderful. Great. Okay. And then, well, and repeat business is guaranteed. Mm-hmm. The business success really is, you can sort of staticize it on the number of revolutions that this cycle goes around and around and around. So then you get the revolution count, right? And then you get with that the amount of revolutions that go around, and then you start getting bigger and bigger and bigger as your reputation starts to grow and grow and grow. And that's your expansion, your business expansion. Mm. And then once you have that, then you can set up, like in a restaurant, for instance, you can set up another one, you know, in LA and another one in Sacramento and then take one to San Francisco or whatever. That's it. That formula is it. And you can apply it to anything, whether you're selling bulk bags or you're selling food at a restaurant or cars or anything. Just do those five things, mm-hmm. and you'll be successful in whatever business you have.
Yeah, that's the most practical advice I think that has been given. So that's really good, and I really hope people write it down. You can play this back and listen to what John said, and I think the key takeaway is really emphasizing the quality in each step.
Yes.
To ensure that cycle is being returned, because it's not about the first sale. It's about the repeating cycle of continuing to actually grow. And in my mind, I saw this tiny little circle, right, that had those steps in it, and it grew and grew and grew more as time went on, as you were saying that story. So,
and that's how I was able to sell a $17,000 business for $100,000 in 18 months.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great model. Yeah, well... Every time I talk to you, I definitely feel like I learned something. So thank you so much for coming on, and it's been such a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Is there any way you want people to reach out to you or anything that you want anyone else to know?
No, they can just reach out through your podcast, I'm sure. You know, I think I'm going to have to put a book together, Daniel.
You should. Yeah.
We'll get a book
together.
Because
there's so much stuff that I know you have that hasn't been said today. Yeah, so you have to come back again sometime or write that book, both.
We'll write the book, and we'll have the book, and we'll discuss the book, and we can give books away or something.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah. All right, John. Well, thank you so much.
All right, buddy. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.